everyone. Welcome to Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guests today are SoCal punk legends. Their 1994 album, Smash, is aptly named. It remains the best-selling indie label release of all time. It has classics like Get Away, Come Out and Play, and Self-Esteem. They followed it up with Ex-Nay on the Ombre and Americana, which features songs that, to me, define rock in the late 90s. Pretty Fly for a White Guy, Why Don't You Get a Job, and The Kids Aren't All Right. Now they're back with their first new album in 9 years, and it's worth the wait. Called Let the Bad Times Roll, it's inspired by, well, the last 9 years for a start. Songs like This Is Not Utopia, The Opioid Diaries, and the title track reference this undoubtedly dark period. But there's a great deal of hope in there, too. I'm so happy to welcome Dexter Holland and Noodles from The Offspring.
Thank you.
Guys, thank you so much for taking the time. So excited to speak to you. First and foremost, huge congratulations. The record is here. The good news is your album's here. The bad news is it's a pretty bummer time in the world right now. And the sentiment is reflected in the title, Let the Bad Times Roll. It's the mosh pit at the end of the world. How did you land on that as the title of your album?
Yeah, well, gosh, I mean, yeah, look at the world around us.
It seemed appropriate, right. Yeah. That's for sure, right?
You know, and there's two ways of looking at Let the Bad Times Roll. One is that, you know, we have these world leaders that kind of want to keep the bad times rolling, keep people divided. You know, the world is, we're just so divided right now. The other way of looking at it is, man, how bad are things going to get? What else you got? I mean, bring it. Let the bad times roll. We'll take it, man.
Okay, whatever.
We're done fighting. We're just going to make the most out of it. What do you got? You know?
Well, you had Stuff Is Messed Up in 2008, and it's still pretty messed up. But I don't know. I detect a lot of hope in the song, in the album title and in the song. There's this hopeful optimism to it.
I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah. Thank you. At first look, you might say, God, these are all pretty dark song titles and subjects and stuff, but we try to put hope into our music and our song. I think it's an important part of our message, what we're going for.
Yeah, absolutely. So this album's been a long time in the works. I think I read that first sessions were in, I think, August of 2013. When did you know that you were at the finish line? How did you decide that it was sort of ready and time to let it go?
Really right as the pandemic was hitting.
Yeah,
we kind of realized. Boom. Yeah, you know, because we've been talking about being done, but then we kept writing more and more. We kept having this really creative period about 2 years ago,
and we finally had it done. Yeah, and the pandemic hit, and we're like, "Well, shit, we didn't want the bad times to roll that hard." You know, now we can't even put the record out.
Fucking bad times rolling and shit.
Yeah. This must be infuriating. You finally are ready, and then you got to sit on it for like a year.
Yeah,
we didn't know for sure if we should sit on it or not, but it just felt like people's minds are elsewhere right now, and we can't go out there and support it.
Yeah, we can't tour, you know, can't travel and talk about it. So let's just take a look at what we got. And we got to spend some good time on the artwork, you know, really kind of taking a look, maybe tweaking some things here and there, just fine-tuning it a bit. And then we started doing like Christmas. We did a Christmas song. We did a cover of the song from the Tiger King.
That was amazing.
Thank you. And at some point, okay, man, we got to stop fucking around. The record's done. We got to get it out. We got to get it to the fans. We want to hear what the fans are going to say about this. We spent a good long time working on it.
I want to ask you about the artwork. It's so cool. It's like Shiva meets Day of the Dead. How did that come about?
Exactly right. Yeah.
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 That's pretty much the idea. I mean, I had the idea for a Shiva kind of character, and the idea is that in her hands, she's holding society's ills, or, you know, some of the things that we're going to explore more in the album. You can see what violence and drugs or greed or, you know, anarchy, I suppose, are the things she's kind of holding. I debated whether to put a virus in one of her hands, and then I decided that was a little too on the nose.
Too timely.
I wanted to be just a little more oblique than that. So that was kind of my initial idea. And then we found this guy, David, who's a really great artist, and started talking through, hashing out the ideas, and he really put it together and interpreted it, and he's just so great. I'm so happy that we found him.
Oh, man, it looks incredible. You said that this is the most cathartic record that you've ever released. I wanted to ask you more about that. Why is that? Is it just the amount of time that you put into it, or specific songs?
Yeah, I mean, when we grew up, it was those kinds of songs that when a band would talk about being depressed or something that's wrong with
feeling
the world.
Alienated or disenfranchised.
Those were the ones that would help us, just me as a kid, the most. It wasn't, you'd almost think intuitively, it would make you feel worse to hear some guy singing about being depressed or whatever, or isolated, but it was actually very freeing. It was very much like, oh yeah, I'm not the only one. I'm not alone. It was very healing. So that's why we've never been afraid to go after those subjects, and hopefully it will mean something to other people as well, but for me, it certainly did.
And as you pointed out, there is also the message of hope that we will get through all these things, you know. So yeah, it is cathartic.
Who were some bands when you were first getting into music that made you feel that way, that you felt spoken to and less alone?
TSOL was huge.
For sure. TSOL and the Adolescents were the big ones at that period of time, that kind of teenage years and stuff. Of course, the bands that came before were important, like the Sex Pistols and the Ramones. And, you know, those are bands I still listen to regularly, and they're a big part of our life and stuff.
The album is just so incredible. I wanted to ask you about a song that's meant a lot to me for many years, and it was so fascinating and wonderful to hear you revisit it, and that's Gone Away, the beautiful version with piano and strings. What made you decide to, I know that version has been in your live set for a long time, what made you decide to put it on this album?
The fans really asked us for it. Yeah, it is something we've been playing live for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's kind of a dramatic part of the set. Every night, and taking that song, which has probably reached our fans in a way more as deeply as any song we've ever done, you know, as intensely. It really does strike a chord with our fans, and playing it acoustically kind of purifies it, strips it down to its purest form. You know, you're not hiding the vocals behind heavy guitar, bass, and drums, and the fans really connected with that during the live performance, and have been asking us meet and greets, you know, on social media, when can they hear a studio version, you know, of the piano Gone Away? And so we decided to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Was it, I don't know if the word daunting is the right word, but what was it like for you to revisit that song? I mean, just something that does, I mean, obviously it comes from such a personal place for you, but also it's touched so many people in such a way. What was that like to revisit that?
When you're working with a song, you know, and you do it 100 times, there's sort of this industrialization of the song, right? But reworking the song again felt really very emotional, actually, because you're kind of re-examining the lyrics and your feelings and about how when you wrote it and what it meant and all that stuff. And especially doing it with just a piano, I felt like it made the vocal a lot more personal. So it was almost a vulnerability that was almost kind of uncomfortable even doing it that way. It took a little time to get that performance out.
We convinced him it was great and that it was worthwhile.
That's right.
Is, I mean, you know, one of the highlights of the record for me. I wanted to ask you about a song that really blew my mind was the cover of the In the Hall of the Mountain King. Where did that come from?
That is meant to be this kind of, you know, WTF moment in the record. It was out of fun. Our idea of this would be fun to do, you know, we can get away with a short what the fuck moment on a record, you know, and punk, just have fun with it.
Punk version of a classical song, right? Who'd have thought? I'll bet you Greek didn't think of that.
He didn't.
No,
he didn't. He should have.
He missed it.
Piker?
Piker. What's a piker?
A piker is somebody who does things in small ways. They don't give it the full effort.
Okay.
Greek was so close.
You heard it.
Edvard, you were so close.
So close. Don't be a piker.
Well, how has the last year been for you? I mean, I know you have your own studio, so that's going to be helpful for at least like making music. Have you been productive musically and working on new stuff or refining the album, or what have you been up to?
A lot of rehearsing, you know, besides doing Tiger King covers, we been rehearsing, you know, taking the new record and assigning who's going to be playing what part where, you know, and how to make it sound really good live, because it's different than, you know, putting it all on tape. And then also going back and rehearsing the old stuff and making sure we're locked in parts where maybe we got a little sloppier. After a while, you develop bad habits in your playing, and you have to kind of correct for that. I do anyways, you know, maybe it's not just me. Or maybe it is just me. Anyways, we've been doing all that. It's been fun. We can't play for a live audience, so let's get in here and at least kind of connect as musicians. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, what's the latest with that? Because I know I'm starting to hear some bands are starting to tentatively announce tours later in the year, early next year. Do you have an eye on that yet, or is it's still TBD?
Yeah, I mean, we want to get out there and play, so we definitely are keeping our eye on that and making sure we're going to be ready to go when it's safe to gather. We're looking at, we've just announced some shows in November. We're slated to play here in California in October. You know, we're hopeful that with the virus, the vaccines rolling out and the virus, you know, slowing down, and hopefully we can put it to bed and
hopefully for the fall.
Yeah.
Do you have any concert or tour rituals or superstitions?
I don't know if we have any superstitions. I used to have a superstition that I needed to drink 2 or 3 beers before every show.
There you go.
But
yeah,
I've learned that I can actually play a show without that. It's not as fun, but
yeah,
still.
He didn't want to mess with that superstition. He didn't want to find.
I didn't want to mess with that.
He didn't want to find out.
Some of these. Yeah, I was invested in that one. We don't really. I mean, you know, Dexter likes to warm. He warms up his voice before he plays. That's important, especially if you're doing like 3 shows in a row. You don't want to, you know, wear your voice out. The rest of us like to get together and just kind of play guitar riffs off each other and kind of, you know, if we're working in a new song or a song we haven't played in a while, we run through that a few times, make sure we remember how to play it correctly, you know, make sure we're locked in. Really just kind of hang out and get a feel for the venue and, you know, warm up a little bit.
Do you ever have any Spinal Tap moments?
Oh my gosh.
Always, yeah. Always. I mean, that movie is just the gift that keeps on giving, because it is so true and so accurate in so many ways.
I remember we went through a period where we watched it quite a bit, even though it had been out for a long time. But even by then, by the time we were doing, I don't know, Self-Esteem, like we had gone through all that, like we knew all those scenes because we've been lost backstage.
Yeah.
We've been Puppet Show and The Offspring.
Do the Jazz Odyssey, like just all of a sudden, just screw the set. We're going to do Jazz Odyssey.
The Little Bread still frustrates me.
The Little Bread.
Yeah. Do the Little Bread.
Well,
too much fucking perspective at Graceland.
Too much perspective.
Yeah.
It's great.
Dexter, first of all, congratulations on your PhD. I feel like I should have mentioned that earlier.
Thank you.
I mean, not only are you a touring musician, but you're someone who has a PhD in molecular biology. What is your take on, you know, how things are going? Like, do you think we not to totally put you on the spot, but do you think we're turning a corner?
I do. And look, I don't want to speak as an expert because it's not what I do for a living, but yeah, I mean, it's a matter of getting on top of the vaccinations for sure. And fortunately in the U.S., we've actually done a pretty good job of the rollout, I think. 200 million shots given, right?
So it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I think in California anyway, I heard 50% have at least one shot.
Wow.
Like these are big numbers. It's great. Yeah. So we just got to get on top of that before the variants get on top of that. Yeah. And I think we're going to get there.
Well, what else can we look forward to? So, no, before you get out on the road, what else can fans expect from you?
We've been doing this series of videos called How To with The Offspring, and we've released a couple. One is How To Surf, and Dexter teaches you how to surf.
Mm-hmm.
And then one where I teach you how to birdwatch,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if people are really going to learn anything from these things, but
that's
part of the joke.
You really don't learn how to birdwatch at all. You don't.
Or how to surf. Yeah, how to catch a wave.
You can find it on YouTube or wherever you get your videos and stuff. But
we have our own YouTube page. You can see it in amongst our videos.
They've been fun to make. So I'm gonna do one. I think the next one I want to do is going to be how to fly a fighter jet.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. You got your pilot's license, right?
So, yeah.
And at some point, we might actually do things that you can learn. Like, I could show people how to play the solo to Kids Aren't All Right or something like that. That'd be a little more, you know, serious.
Yeah.
Maybe that'd be
how to really do something with the offspring.
Yeah, surfing definitely seems like something that maybe over a video tutorial kind of need to be there.
Yeah.
How long have you been surfing? I mean, that's something that I'm a New England kid, so that's just totally foreign to me.
There's some surf up there, but it's cold.
Yeah, it's snowing right now. I'm not kidding. It's snowing right now. So,
I mean, I started surfing when I was 12, and it's something I've been doing on and off my whole life. And it's just, it's the coolest feeling in the world when you catch a wave and you start riding up and down and, you know.
It is.
Yeah, it's just a great feeling. Does it? I mean, it goes by really pretty quick. You spend a lot of time out in the water paddling, watching the horizon, looking for bumps to pop up, trying to get into position, you know, trying to get around other people. And, yeah, it's a lot of work for a pretty short payoff, but the feeling is incredible. It's really a neat feeling.
Well, guys, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. It's been so great talking to you. My last question, and this has been the question I've been asking everybody as we wrap these up. Hopefully, I won't be able to ask it much longer. But if you could snap your fingers and have everything go back to whatever your definition of normal is, say 2019, what would be the first thing that you would do? People you'd hug, places you'd travel to, restaurants you'd go eat at without a mask. What would be the first thing that you would do?
I want to go to Mother's and have a mason jar full of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
That is a solid answer.
Yeah. I'd like to play a show. That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. That too.
Show and beer. That sounds like a good night.
We're simple people. We're not pikes, though.
Not pikers.
Pikers. Not pikers.
A pike is a fish.
Oh, well, we're not. We're neither of those things.
You're not fish.
We're not fish. No. Not fish. Offspring, not fish.
I like
it. You heard it here first,
run
people.
With it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. The record's incredible. You're incredible. Thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.